Before we begin, we'd like to welcome our newest patron, Joshua Jones. Thank you so much for supporting the show. If you listen to the show and are able to contribute a couple bucks a month, please visit patreon.com/coachyourbrainsout.
Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, the show that explores learning from the top minds in volleyball and beyond. With your hosts, John Mayer, Billy Allen, Andrew Fuller, and Nils Nielsen.
Today, we're excited to have Dan Fisher, the head volleyball coach at the University of Pittsburgh, with us. Dan, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Well, congrats on an amazing season at Pitt. You guys went 30-1 in the regular season. It's an unbelievable achievement. How'd you feel overall about the season?
Yeah, before we jump into that, I just found out you retired. Is that I think a congratulations are in order?
Yeah, bigger news.
Yeah, I didn't go 30-1 this year though.
And I think this is a big moment for me because I have two big John Mayer memories. One is when I asked you to play in an AVP tournament, and you turned me down. That still stings a little bit. And then I did talk to you at one point about starting the men's program at Concordia. So. I have two like rejection stories.
Well, maybe I can make up for it today here on the podcast with some good questions. I don't know.
I love what you guys do, and I listen to it all the time. So it's good to be here.
We're glad to have you as a listener. And my memory is when I first started playing, you were like Phil Dahlhauser to me. It's like that guy is like crushing the ball and blocks balls, and he's really gnarly. I don't know why.
I think it lasted like 2 months before you realized that it wasn't.
But I do have that memory, so I'm going to keep it there.
Cool. What was the question?
How'd you feel about your season?
The way I felt about it when it ended was obviously I wanted to go a little further. So we didn't quite make our goal of getting past the second round, but I feel really proud of, the consistency it takes to win a lot of games. So it was, and I really enjoy the group. So yeah, I feel good about it.
Nice. And today our topic is on program building. Can you take us back to 2013 when you first took over the program at Pitt, and maybe talk about what it was like both on and off the court with you stepping into that role?
Yeah, well, I don't know if you guys remember a guy by the name of Mike Hebert, who used to coach at a bunch of places. He's involved in the national team. Yeah. So he was most recently at Minnesota, and we had coached a Pan Am Cup together a couple years before, actually the summer before I won the championship at Concordia. And so he, back in the early 80s, was the men's – Pitt used to have a men's volleyball program. And so he was the head coach for the men's and the women's team at one point here. And he kind of called me about the job and, convinced me to come out. And so he's kind of been a mentor of mine. I took the job. And at the time I was the youngest coach in the Power Five. I had never been to Pittsburgh before the interview. I had a newborn daughter. I was 3 months old, and my wife was up for an adventure. So, that was big. Then walking into the team, we had, we didn't have any commitments, no seniors, no juniors, no sophomores. So we had to really recruit for like three classes at once. And I walked into an older team. It was, it was a lot of rising juniors, and I'm still really close with all those players. It was a really a charismatic group at the time. They got along really well there, but it was almost like it was more of a sorority. The volleyball side of it wasn't as big of a priority, but it was a really neat group. So some fond memories.
I didn't know Pitt had a men's team. Was it Division One?
Division One. Wow, so it was one of the ones, you know, and we're right in between Ohio State and Penn State. So that actually geographically makes a lot of sense. But it was one of the programs that got hit pretty hard by Title IX.
Yeah. So what were some of your priorities, say more on the volleyball side of things when you first came in?
Yeah. So I mentioned, the cupboard wasn't empty. There was some tall players with some arms, but so establishing, the idea of training the whole game was big. We spent a lot of, it was probably like your Pierce practices a little bit, John. We had to spend a lot of time with the coach on Robert. We did a lot of error correction. Yeah. And then had to establish, just like a culture of competing every day in practice. So that was kind of, what we did a lot.
What do you mean by training the whole game? Like what would you guys do?
Yeah, we had a girl that would be good at digging, but nothing else. And one girl was pretty good at serving, but, and then we just had a lot of front row only type players. And so just the idea that I expected everyone to be able to set and everyone to be able to, to do the perform all the skills at Division I level, which probably comes from the beach a little bit.
Yeah.
Could you
take us through whether it was then or now? I don't know if it's changed much, but just a typical pit practice.
Yeah. I hope it's changed. I hope I'm evolving, but, typically we'll have a few different, focuses of the session. My warm-up drills are, I choose between, I guess I have 10 to 15 that are, it's a lot of on the ball over the net early that I look at the warm-up drills and I say, no matter what the focus of the session is, I want to make sure in warm-ups they got a chance to work on every part of the game. So I don't like to have a practice where someone didn't get to set or pass a ball or serve a ball. So we try to do that in the first 30 or 45 minutes. And then we'll break into some split court kind of tutor sessions. And then we'll have our 6-on-6 time. And sometimes I'll knock it on its head and we'll go right into sixes. But that's the typical model.
And you mentioned when you first took over, you had to establish a culture of competing. Mm-hmm. I guess what advice do you have for maybe coaches that struggle with that, maybe with their own players? How do they kind of get them to be more competitive? And I guess how do you tailor a practice for that?
Gosh, I think it's something. There's certain drills that are better for it, but I think it's something you have to talk about all the time, and you have to talk about how much you value people that want to win, there's a number of ways you can do it, but it has to be a priority. And I think for hitters doing matchups where, it's one against one essentially, for setters, if you have three of them and you can kind of do doghouse rules and say, if you're doing a bunch of mini games, you say, hey, if you lose, you're out. I know some coaches do cauldrons. I've done that in the past. Mixed feelings on that, but I think it's just something you have to talk about it every day, and so your players know how important that is.
Nice. Go more into that. Can you talk about your mixed feelings on cauldron? What did you see that worked for your group? And I guess what was that? I guess a fault of it.
It depends on the group. I don't like athletes always consumed with stats mm-hmm. or points. And I think in some years, it's a big waste of your staff's time when you have a clear starting lineup. You don't really have that much competition. It takes a lot of man hours to do it. But I do think it's you know, I think you can accomplish a lot of the same things just by taking stats and practice. I think it's good. I might go back to it at some point, but I just don't always want players in January thinking about their hitting percentage or, you know, I don't know.
When you're recruiting, so it's kind of this culture of competing in mind, is that something you're looking for? Is that even something you can really get a good enough feel for when you're recruiting athletes?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely look at the Anson Dorrance model of, I guess an outside hitter is the easiest one to find, but if you find maybe a team that is slightly, not lower level, but maybe not the best club team, and you see a girl that's, passing every ball, getting set every ball, and kind of winning the game for a team. I think that's, you got to look at their eyes a lot. How do they look at the coaches? How do they look at their teammates? How do they talk to their teammates? But that part is less scientific, I'd say.
I'm intrigued by that. So say more when you're working with your girls, are you looking at their eyes? Is that something you coach?
Yes.
What are some things that you see, like things that you do to help change them?
Well, eye contact is a really big part of our team. We do a drill sometime. We establish, when we're having a debrief after practice, sometimes we'll do like a washout, or sometimes we'll say one good thing about a teammate or say one bad thing about practice. And so we'll make sure that they're looking right at that person. Sometimes we'll do hitting lines and we call them connecting lines. And so we'll split into two courts depending on squad size, and we'll throw a ball in to be passed and set and hit. And then the setter and the hitter have to lock in and talk about that set and look at each other before you'll toss in the next ball. And so we practice connecting.
I like it.
Cool. And I guess outside of volleyball, what did you do when you first got there to build the program?
Yeah, this is, the immediate thing was hiring a staff and recruiting. And I brought Lindsay with me from California, which is a great choice. It's nice to not, when you're taking over a program, to not have to start, 50 new relationships at once. It's nice to have someone that kind of knows the culture you want and you trust. And then I hired Craig Dyer, who was someone that was a little better, that used to be, was from the men's game, and so I knew could train at a good level, but he was a little bit more connected recruiting wise in this area. That was the immediate, but then once we got in the gym, we could probably have a whole podcast on building culture, but that was essentially the biggest thing. And it started with things like going to class, encouraging girls to come by the office. A couple times we have a area in the Peterson Event Center where there's a food court, and we'd see them there. We just go and sit down with them, and you could tell that that wasn't part of the deal of, them spending any time with the coaches outside of practice. Just finding different ways to connect. I think in the early days, I would just send I would text a lot of the girls, a new song I had heard, that, cause I knew they liked a certain type of music, I got some stories I could share if you want some,
Yeah, I guess what was the response from the players to have that shift where the coach gets really involved? Maybe they didn't have that in the past.
Yeah, I think they liked it. I was simultaneously, I was kicking their butts in the gym. So I think it was like a little, probably
good cop, bad cop.
Yeah, overwhelming at the time. And so, one, there's a couple stories from like that, the first 2 years that really stand out. One was, I guess I came in and I kind of told you how the team was, I mean, it was a really fun group. We probably had three girls that could have been comedians. I mean, they were a really charismatic team. And I kind of, within about a week, you could see there was one girl who was the clear queen bee. And if I didn't get her in line, it was going to be pretty rough. And so I made her life pretty miserable, I'd say, for the first 2 months. because she was just a player that could only hit, and I was just hammering her to learn the whole game, and she liked to party a lot, and I just kind of made it clear, like, she needs to change. And after about a couple months of this, I'm on a conference call in my office, and we have one of our assistants who's out recruiting. He's on speakerphone, and she just comes storming into the office, and she was just ready to leave. And so she just comes in and just is laying into us for about 10 minutes. And all kind of just like, hey, I was feeling really judged right now, and yada, yada, yada. And the result of it was that, it was an opportunity for her to go, hey, we're hard on you because we think you'd be pretty good, and we think you can influence this team. And so 20 minutes in to this exchange, we forgot that Craig Dyer was still on speakerphone. So he chimes in and is like, oh, hey, Jess, I have something to add. And awkward. So it was, and then, once we got her in line, that was kind of the rest of the team followed. And I got a couple other stories I could share. I don't know how much you like these. But.
No, the stories are good. I was wondering more from maybe from the community. I know you had mentioned and people have talked about how, I think your first year there was 10 to 20 people in the crowd, and now your home matches are packed. What has, led to that growth?
Yeah, I think that's been something that's taken 6 years. And growing the camps was a priority, like starting, with the little kids, because once they like coming, they bring their families. I don't know that I have any mind-breaking marketing ideas. I would just say that I cared a lot about it, and I was we always kept working on it. And then this year, it seemed like we just kind of hit a tipping point within the community where everyone seemed to know like Pitt had a good volleyball team. And then it just, I think I want to say five games had over 2,000 fans, and we set the attendance record with one of them. So it was pretty cool.
That's really cool. Do you expect it to continue to grow?
I hope so. But I mean, we're in a really dynamic city where, the people love sports, but there's also the Pirates, the Penguins, the Steelers, there's a lot going on. And, but I do think we've kind of cracked in with the volleyball community, I'm hopeful.
What do you do to get your admin, the staff around you, not so much your volleyball staff, but just at the university to just be supportive of your ideas?
Mm-hmm. Well, first off, they hired me, and so when that helps, and then I won pretty early. And so, I think after 2 years, I would say like the turning point for me of knowing that I was in pretty good shape was, our athletic director at the time was a guy named Steve Peterson. And so I got a couple phone calls that year from other programs, and right away he didn't hesitate. He wanted to offer me a contract and was very complimentary. And one of the things he said, kind of took us back to right when he hired me. Sometimes you have these conversations with administrators about, hey, do you want me to, how do you feel about me cutting players? And those are tough conversations because that's, it's no fun to push someone out of a program. And so at the time, Steve had told me, hey, we don't really want you to run anyone out, you know, if they're working hard and they're, you know, we want to keep them. But he kind of said, hey, but they're going to see how hard it's going to be. And if they don't think they'll play, they'll just transfer. And I had responded to him at the time saying, I think they're going to stay and I think they're going to want to play for me. And I think they'll get better. So, and so Steve brought that up 2 years later, and his comment was that, you know, at the time he thought it was pretty pompous, but indeed that's what happened. And so, I was at that point, I knew I was pretty in.
Cause you were right.
Well, I was right. And I guess it's part of, you know, the one thing about connecting with, you know, I don't think there's a guarantee you can always connect with a person. So I think it's something you have to, I had a good group that let me push them. So I feel pretty fortunate that way.
Yeah.
And when it comes to your own staff, how do you get the people in your program to kind of get behind your vision?
I think the main thing is with my own staff is modeling. I mean, I think you need to embody what you're teaching. And so if you're asking the team to do it, you know, if you're asking the team to eat a certain way on the road, you need to do it. If you're asking your players to be uncomfortable, the coaches need to be pushing themselves too. With administration, I do periodically have meetings where I get facilities, I get market, I get everyone, and I just talk about our team and I talk about our culture. And the only thing I might be a little maybe pushy with administrators is I think most of them know that I don't ever want to hear them say the words, hey, next year. And so, I don't mind hearing no, but you know, next year with administrators is pretty much means never. I'm like, if it's important, let's do it right now this year.
Cool. How about, I guess it's been, this is your seventh season, sixth season?
Going into seven. Yeah.
Going into seven. So what's some of the biggest changes you've seen, in the 6 years?
Well, fans that we talked about, that's been a nice change. The expectations are different. When I first got here, you know, it would have been like a dream to beat Florida State or UNC. And now it's expected. I think amongst the players, they think they're good now. When you take over a program, that I can remember the first time we beat Duke, who was a top 25 team. It was just, you know, they were just amazed. And I think people in our program now, they think they're good enough. And I think our culture, I don't have to work as hard. We talk a lot about the culture of want to versus have to, and I don't have to work as hard as I used to, for a girl to want to go in and do extra reps and stay after and, over the summer do, you know, it's actually funny. We have a new basketball coach, Jeff Cable, came from Duke. And basketball, this blew my mind. Basketball is, you know, has so many training hours over the summer that he was saying, he's like, I can't get the guys to do an open gym. And I was just mind blown that my women's volleyball team can have a better open gym than a men's basketball team at this point. So
what's led to that? Why do they want to?
Well, I just think that Jeff value. In my program.
Yeah. For you guys. Yeah. Why do your girls want to? And
I just think they come in and they see, a senior setter that's every practice, they're 45 minutes early getting reps and staying later to serve, and they're going, wow, that must be what you do.
That was part one with Dan Fisher. Join us next week for more insights on building a program. This is part two of our interview with Dan Fisher on building a program.
Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, the show that explores learning from the top minds in volleyball and beyond. With your hosts, John Mayer, Billy Allen, Andrew Fuller, and Nils Nielsen.
What do you think the challenges are of following up on a 30-1 season? You know, having now, there's obviously expectations.
Yeah, I think that you just kind of the realization that we're going to have goals and we're going to have big dreams, but our path might not be the same, you know? So I don't expect to go undefeated or, you know, so I just, you know, it's going to be how we deal with it when if we do lose a game we didn't think we should have, or I think that'll be the biggest challenge. And we did a pretty good job of this year, but I guess it's just figuring out ways to quiet the noise.
Yeah. What do you think is more important as a college coach, to know like X's and O's or, you know, motor learning stuff and be a great volleyball coach, or to be better on the other side, like building your program, getting with the administration, getting the, mm-hmm. the community behind you?
The short answer is, I think, at a high level, building a program by a very small margin. But I'll backtrack to Mike Hebert, because he was the first one that kind of got me thinking. He said, "Hey, Dan, you got to decide if you want to be a great coach or you want to build a program." And I think, you know, they're not mutually exclusive. I think all of the top coaches are good in the gym, but I do think building a program is more important, being a program builder, because if you're great in the gym but you don't care about recruiting, there's a talent minimum. If you don't get fans in the seats, that's going to hurt recruiting. I think it all matters.
Right.
What were some mistakes you made along the way when building your program?
Certainly recruiting. You know, there's sometimes you just, you know, like the idea that if we don't get this kid, like no one's going to be left, or, you know, like making a mistake on someone that wasn't maybe as good of a player as you could have gotten. When I got here, the other one I would say scheduling, that was a part of the job I knew nothing about. And so, you know, there was 2 years in a row, my second and third year, where we were 49 RPI and then 46. And both those years, the selection committee did not take us, even though we thought we had good resumes. And if I was a little better at recruiting or scheduling then, I think we might have gotten in. And Chris Poole from Florida State's actually mentored me a lot there, and he's really good at it. And then there's a lot of mistakes. The final one that comes to mind is, I think this was year two. We kind of aligned ourselves with a club in town. And I was coming from California thinking it's no big deal to have your assistant coach at this club versus another one. And I did a couple coaching clinics, and I just thought it would be a good opportunity for my assistants to make more money, and maybe some of my players could get a coaching club job. And it just turned out it just pissed everyone off in the community and ended up being a headache.
Yeah. Well, back to you mentioned recruiting as maybe some mistakes you made there. Was that just not getting those players? Was it just the girls' choice, or were there things that you could have done, I guess, differently in hindsight?
Yeah, I don't think you ever feel like you know how to recruit. I guess my biggest advice for recruiting is to you just have to stay uncomfortable for long periods of time. There's always this, people like to say, "Oh, I'm done with the 2019 class," and I think if you're and there's this desire to feel like I've completed a task, but I think the best recruiters never really think they're done, or will find a way to, you know, get a kid to walk on for a semester, or find, you know, they'll figure out a way to, that they're never done trying to better their roster. And so it's changing. We're going through a big change. I don't know if you guys are up to speed on all the recruiting changes, but the NC2A is doing a lot to try to slow it down.
Mm-hmm.
But when I first got here, it's like, you know, you're all of a sudden you get the job and, you know, all these Big Ten schools are committing freshmen and you're like, I don't even know who these players are. And so this idea that like, if I don't commit a kid early, I'm not going to get a good kid is, you know, it's, you know, you always feel pressure from it as a recruiter. So it's the ability to like be able to look at a pretty good player and say no and go, oh, we're going to have to wait and we're going to make the tough choice and try to get someone better.
Is there a year you found that's been most successful that you've committed kids that they are?
You know, we haven't been successful with early recruiting. And part of that's I haven't really tried because I don't really like it. So most of the kids that have been of the earlier side that have been pretty good have been early junior year, you know, or maybe the summer going into their junior year. But we've only had, I think there was only one or two that committed as sophomores. And those ones usually put the pressure on me. They were kind of going, hey, what's the deal? Are you going to offer me? Or because Duke wants to know.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say for the domestic, you know, for the kids, it's been junior. And then of course, you know, foreigners are later and the transfer portal is changing
things. Yeah, for sure. It's going to be interesting to see how that continues to change things.
Yep.
So we mentioned how you were the Phil Dalhauser of the 2003 Beach game. So I wanted to talk a little bit about how your Beach background has influenced your coaching.
I definitely think just what we talked about before is, you know, the idea that, you know, that everything matters, that, you know, and I think also that I also think it changed too for me because, you know, I played in college and during side out era. And then my first year professionally in Europe was the switch to rally scoring. And I just think that there was a realization that everything matters at a high level. Like if you're middle at 25 all, can't cover a ball, it matters a lot. Mm-hmm. And so I just think the Beach, you learn that on the Beach, you can't have a glaring weakness. So I think that the girls that spend 4 years in my program and, you know, pretty well rounded.
Do you guys play much doubles or in the spring, do you guys get out and get any Beach play in?
We do. And I would venture to say we probably play more sand or grass tournaments the girls do over the summertime than any program that doesn't have a Beach team. But I think it's a lot of like warm up drills, like, you know, half court over the neck type stuff where they're just, they're used to, you know, having to be on the ball.
And when's the last time you spiked on the Beach?
Well, we have last summer.
Okay.
Or no, actually I was in Santa Barbara over break and I got a couple games in. So I had about a month ago.
Well, but maybe now's my chance to make it up.
Redeem yourself.
Open. 2019.
Can we play the Dino together? Is that, are we combined 80?
You have to
I'm
be
42.
I'm 36.
That's so mess.
Yeah, I think almost, a couple more years.
Okay. I think that's, yeah, that'd be good.
Okay. I'll start training for it. So you've coached at the men's, actually probably more at the men's than the women's level, but coached both levels. Do you change your coaching style when working with different genders?
It's been a while since I've coached guys. Well, we still have some guys come to our summer camps, but I don't change a whole lot. We teach skills the same way. The only difference I've noticed is I think there's a tendency on women's teams to bottle things up a little bit more. And so, you know, in a men's gym, if I thought two guys were kind of taking it a little too far, I might let it go. Or if there's some weird tension, I might let it go a couple of days and see if it sorted itself out. But I think on a women's team, if I sense that someone seems pretty unhappy, I try not to let it fester.
And we have a question from listener Ben Lee. Have you taken anything from the style of play from the men's game to your program at Pitt?
Definitely. The main thing is just being really aggressive offensively. And if you look at our stats, I haven't done, I did a whole study on it 2 years ago, but essentially we would average, more errors than almost any other team, but they were like getting blocked errors, but we would get I think we're 2-1 on getting more kills than our opponents. So, teams that play us, we crush their digs per set average. So we try to go for it and be pretty, without being, it gets reckless sometimes, but we try to be pretty aggressive out of system.
How do you train that?
You do a lot of virus and bounce drills, and, we'll do, this sounds silly, but we'll do like a drill or like an error correction. And we'll say, hey, for the next 10 minutes, like the only error is if you don't take the hardest swing of your life. And we'll sit and we'll yell, swing, crush, like go for it. And what I found with doing stuff like that is it's surprising how few errors you make when you're going for it. So
do you have players who are hesitant to take risks?
Oh yeah. I think the majority.
Yeah.
I think that's if you guys ever heard of the book Top Dog?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a whole section in that about how female athletes versus male athletes, uh-huh, as the stakes go higher, like the female athlete in general has a tendency to pull back and be conservative. And so I think my observation of the women's game is typically the longer the rally goes, the more tips happen. And so we try to train in bursts of 30 to seconds to a minute of high intensity and then we chill. And I think our style, I guess, would be probably a little bit more on a like a men's basketball coach. We hoot and holler and we try to encourage and be really aggressive.
That sounds like a fun way to play.
It's it can be exhausting.
But I'm guessing it helps the girls look forward to practice. And I mean, anytime you can get people feeling like they can play free and not being judged for making mistakes. And it's got to be a great environment to be a part of. Obviously, it's working.
Yeah, it's there have been times where I've questioned that philosophy, and one of them I'm questioning it now because, a lot of what I've done, I think, helped get us in the NCAA tournament, and now I'm at a phase of going, okay, is the way we're playing, do I need to reevaluate that to take another step? So
against Michigan, you felt like your style of play held you guys back?
Not necessarily that game, but I just, we did a quick study on what our numbers were like against other top 25 teams. And then all of a sudden, we didn't have a serve and pass advantage. We didn't necessarily have an out of system defense advantage. I'm trying to, I believe in playing aggressively, but I'm trying to stay open to, am I really training the best way?
Mm-hmm. Cool. I'm excited to follow along. So we have some questions from your assistant coaches, from Lindsay Bohonic. I don't know if I said that right.
Bohonic, yeah.
And Kellen Patron.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll go. We got a couple of them, so go through them. One of them is, what are you exceptional at and why?
Exceptional at controlling the mood at the gym.
And why?
Why am I exceptional at that? I think it was emotional intelligence. I don't know where I first learned this concept, but the most powerful emotion in the room typically controls the energy of the room. And so I think you have to have, pretty good awareness of what the state of the gym is. And if it's pretty flat, you got to raise the intensity level. And if everyone's really stressed and nervous for a game, I probably need to crack a joke. So I think I'm pretty good at that.
How would you describe the mood? Like what are you going for?
There's very, very few practices where we do a light serve and pass. And so we will obviously shorten the duration of the practice, but I like really high intense, high intensity firing practices.
So what do you do to prep yourself? Say, the season's gone on and maybe you're a little fatigued and we're up late. How do you make sure you maintain that?
I've wondered that about myself and I don't have a good answer, but sometimes it just kind of, I really believe at coaching at a level to win. And when I'm not seeing a level to win in the gym or like at least a good, like the intent's not there, I guess I just turn it up another gear.
And what is an area you can grow in as a coach?
Recruiting for sure. Evaluating better, selling better. It's really hard. And then the other one is something I'm kind of learned more about lately and I'm still learning, just increasing like variability in my practice, just trying to, have a better learning environment.
So what do you do to grow? Like how do you push yourself
in these areas?
Yeah.
I think with recruiting, it's a whole staff effort of talking to of learning from other people that are good at recruiting, reading books on selling, whatever we can do. From like the variability side, like just, learning more about continue. I listen to podcasts all the time. I read, I try to keep learning how people learn and then try to be creative with my practice plan so that we maximize that.
Would you say, I could see like after your first couple of seasons you had success, but it's probably easier to be like, oh yeah, well, we lost 10 matches, so we've got a lot to change. Do you feel like it's harder to be open to change when, you win a lot?
Yeah, I guess, good question. I think there's it's obviously good to be grounded in some principles and kind of know how the style of you want to play and how you want to perform skills. But it is the double-edged sword of like thinking you have it all figured out. And from my experience in sports, once you think you have it figured out, you you get reminded really quickly.
Yeah.
So the way I do that is by not just querying us, like I told you, how did we do against the best?
Another one. What would you say to your 25-year-old self?
At 25, I was still playing in Europe, and I would probably tell myself to enjoy all the free time I had. I also would that was my third year living in Spain, I think, or second. And I loved speaking Spanish. I miss it a lot. I miss living in Spain. So I would probably remind myself to enjoy that a little bit more. And then, but that was, I don't know if it was 24, 25, 26. That was right around when I started thinking more about, because right out of college, I thought I was going to be a teacher or counselor. And then that was more when I started thinking about coaching in college. And so I guess I would tell myself that, there's a lot you don't know about what coaches do.
Yeah.
I thought it was just like on the court.
And then another final question from Lindsay and Kellen. What advice would you give to those entering the coaching profession?
The biggest one would just be that there's just a lot of coaching opportunities, and a lot of the, I guess I hear, especially from younger males, a lot of people reach out to me and go, "Hey, I want to be a Power Five head coach." And I guess I don't know that many Power Five head coaches that set out to be that. They just, so I think it's probably the Marv Dunphy advice of just, you know, get really good at you coaching and the rest will take care of itself.
Yeah, you get better by doing.
Yeah.
I was just remembering, I guess, I mean, you were at Pacific when I was at Pepperdine and Billy was at Northridge, right?
Yep.
You were assisting there at Pacific?
Yep.
And you guys had good teams while you were there.
At UOP?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like you guys always beat us when we went up there.
We had two really bad years, and then our last year were pretty good. And then yeah.
Chris Thomas was there when you were there?
No, so when I was, I sat there, and so I was the starting setter my senior year, and he was a senior in high school.
Yeah, you know, no, I was thinking when you were coaching, though. You were coaching him?
No, I never coached him.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
But yeah, he was good. So were you, buddy.
No, I was medium. He was good. We had good players. Cool. Well, this was fun. I was glad we got to spend time picking your brain. And I think we also got to lock in finally a time where we're going to get to play together. And I'm not going to turn you down. So, I mean, I think this worked out all around.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me on. And I just appreciate what you guys are doing for the sport.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for sharing all your knowledge and looking forward to watching you guys continue to do what you're doing. And I wish I want to get in the gym and experience the energy and the I guess all you're bringing. So hopefully we can make a trip out there.
Yeah, I'd love that.
Cool.
Might Sounds need to bring good. More than a sweatshirt this time, John.
Yeah. You can come in maybe April or something.
Yeah, I'll come in August. That's a better time for me.